your milk production back up and running, though the process will likely take time and supplementation with formula may be necessary, at least in the short term. Once in a while, even with the best efforts, under the best conditions, and with the best support and professional advice, it turns out a mom can't provide all the milk her baby needs. A small percentage of women are simply unable to breastfeed exclusively, and a small few can't breastfeed at all. The reasons may be physical, such as a prolactin deficiency, insufficient mammary glandular tissue, markedly asymmetrical breasts, or damage to the nerves going to the nipple caused by breast surgery. More likely to be the case if you've had a reduction than an augmentation. Or it could be due to excessive stress, which can inhibit letdown. Or occasionally, it may not be pinpointed at all. If your baby isn't thriving, and unless the problem appears to be one that can be cleared up in just a few days, her doctor is almost certain to prescribe supplemental formula feedings, possibly with a formula designed for supplementation. Not to stress. What's most important is adequately nourishing your baby, not whether you give breast or bottle. In most cases, when supplementing, you can have the benefits of the direct parent-baby contact that nursing affords by letting baby suckle at your breast for pleasure, hers and yours, after she's finished her bottle, or by using a supplemental nursing system. Often a baby can return to exclusive breastfeeding, or the combo, after a period of supplementation, a goal that's definitely worth trying for. Once a baby who is not doing well on the breast is put on formula temporarily, she almost invariably thrives. In the rare instance that she doesn't, a return trip to the doctor is necessary to see what is interfering with adequate weight gain.
Filling out. Most babies start to fill out by 3 weeks, looking less like scrawny chickens and more like softly rounded babies. In most cases, you can expect a breastfed baby to regain his or her birth weight by 2 weeks and then gain roughly 6 to 8 ounces a week for the next couple of months. Formula-fed babies usually gain weight faster in the beginning. Worried your baby's not filling out fast enough? Remember that your eyes are not necessarily a reliable gauge of your baby's weight gain. After all, you get to see your little one every day, so you're less likely to notice growth than those who see baby less often. Still have doubts? Call the doctor's office and ask if you can bring your baby in for a drive-by weigh-in. Don't try to weigh your baby on a home scale, even if you do the weigh yourself with baby, then weigh yourself without maneuver. Home scales are not sensitive enough to pick up those ounces and half ounces that matter so much to a newborn's weight. Supplemental nursing system. Here's how the SNS works. A bottle filled either with pumped breast milk or formula hangs around your neck. Narrow, flexible tubes leading from the bottle are gently taped onto your breasts, extending slightly past the nipples. As your little one nurses at the breast, he or she gets the supplement through the tube along with any milk that comes from your breasts. It's win-win, since baby gets the nutrition he or she needs, and your breasts get the stimulation they need. That is, when it works according to plan. Some moms find their babies fuss over or even reject feeding from a breast that has a tiny tube hanging off it. It could make it uncomfortable or difficult for some babies to latch on properly. If you find your baby is struggling to nurse when you're using the SNS, have a lactation consultant watch your technique and offer advice and tips on how to make using the SNS easier and better, if possible. Timing is everything. A reminder, like labor contractions, intervals between feedings are timed from the beginning of one to the beginning of the next. So a baby who nurses for 40 minutes, starting at 10 a.m., then sleeps for 1 hour and 20 minutes before eating again, is on a 2-hour schedule, not a 1 hour and 20 minute one. Tongue-tied. Ever hear the term tongue-tied? is often used to refer to someone who's too shy, excited, or embarrassed to get words out. But tongue tie is actually a very real hereditary medical condition that affects up to 2 to 4% of infants, and in some cases can impact their ability to breastfeed successfully. Known in doctor speak as ankyloglossia, this hard-to-pronounce congenital condition means that the frenulum, the band of tissue that connects the bottom of the tongue to the floor of the mouth, is too short and tight. The result? The tongue's movements are restricted, and your baby may have difficulty nursing. How can you tell if your little one is tongue-tied? If baby is unable to stick out his or her tongue fully, or if that little tongue looks heart-shaped, it could mean that it is tied. Another clue? When your baby sucks on your finger, his or her tongue doesn't extend over the gum line as it should. Most tongue-tied babies, usually those whose frenulums are attached farther back in the mouth, have no problem breastfeeding. But if your baby can't use his or her tongue efficiently enough to suck strongly on your nipple and areola, he or she may not be getting enough milk, and slow weight gain and extra fussiness may result. What's more, if the frenulum is so short that the tongue can't extend over the lower gum, your baby may end up compressing your nipple with his or her gums instead of the tongue, and that can cause nipple soreness, pain, clogged ducts, and a host of other problems for you. You'll know that your little one's tongue tie is causing breastfeeding problems if you hear a clicking sound when he or she nurses, or if your baby loses the nipple again and again during a nursing session, which happens because he or she can't extend the tongue enough to get a good grip. If you think tongue tie might be the cause of your baby's breastfeeding problems, or even if you aren't sure and only suspect that might be the problem, have your baby checked out by the pediatrician or an LC. If your baby's tongue tie is truly causing feeding problems, the doctor can clip the frenulum to loosen it and allow the tongue to move freely. Called a frenotomy, the clipping is an extremely quick in-office procedure causing little pain, though not all pediatricians perform it, and you might need a specialist. Special exercises after the procedure may be recommended. Baby's tongue tie isn't causing feeding problems? No need to be concerned. In most cases, the frenulum recedes on its own during the first year and causes no long-term issues with feeding or speaking. Similar to tongue tie is the less common lip tie, which involves the upper lip and gum. The upper lip also has a connective tissue attachment called the maxillary labial frenum. You can feel yours if you run your tongue between your upper lip and top of the gum. And if that tissue is short and tight, or if it attaches farther down the gum, or even between where the front teeth will eventually come in, it may cause breastfeeding problems as well. That's because, in some cases, a lip tie may restrict the movement of the upper lip, making it harder for baby to latch on properly. You can tell if your baby has a lip tie just by lifting his or her upper lip. If it's attached high up, it's normal. If it's attached low on the gum and you're having trouble nursing, you won't necessarily. Check in with an LC who can show you specific positional techniques to help make breastfeeding a success, or advise you on a procedure to revise the lip tie.
Nursing blisters.
Why does my baby have a blister on his upper lip? Is he sucking too hard?
For a baby with a hearty appetite, there's no such thing as sucking too hard, though you of tender nipples may disagree. Nursing blisters, which develop on the center of the upper lips of many newborns, both breast and bottle fed, do come from vigorous sucking, but they're nothing to worry about. They have no medical significance, cause no discomfort to your baby, and will disappear without treatment within a few weeks to months. Sometimes they even seem to disappear between feedings. Feeding schedule.
I seem to be breastfeeding my new daughter all the time. Should I think about getting her on a schedule?
One day your little one will be ready to eat by the clock. But for now, the only schedule that matters is the one her tummy sets for her. And it goes like this. I'm empty, you fill me. I'm empty again, you fill me again. It's a schedule that's built on demand, not on timed intervals. And it's the very best way for a breastfed baby to feed. While bottle-fed newborns can do well on a 3 or 4 hour schedule, in other words, because formula is so filling, they will usually demand another feeding only when 3 to 4 hours have passed, breastfed infants need to eat more often. That's because breast milk is digested more quickly than formula, making a baby feel hungry again sooner. On-demand breastfeeding also ensures that mom's milk supply keeps pace with her baby's growing appetite, which fuels baby's growing body and nurtures a successful breastfeeding relationship. So breastfeed as often as your little eating machine demands during those early weeks. Just keep 3 things in mind as you do. 1, new babies tend to nod off before they're finished filling their tanks, making a concerted effort to keep your baby awake at the breast until she's had a full meal will keep her from waking up hungry an hour later. 2, babies cry for reasons other than feelings of hunger. Getting to know her cries will help you figure out whether she's really in the market for a meal or for a cuddle, some rocking, or a nap, and that will cut down on feeds she doesn't need. And 3, once in a while, a baby's frequent feeding, especially if she seems never satisfied, isn't gaining weight, or shows other signs that she's not thriving, can mean she's not getting enough to eat. If you're concerned that's the case with your baby, check in with the doctor. Once your milk supply is well established, usually at about 3 weeks, you can start stretching the time between feedings. When your little one wakes crying an hour after feeding, don't rush to feed her. If she still seems sleepy, try to get her back to sleep without nursing her. If she seems alert, try some socializing or a little massage or a change of position or point of view. If she's fussy, try wearing her, rocking her, walking with her, or offering her the pacifier. If it's clear she's really hungry, go ahead and feed her again. Just make sure she takes a full meal instead of a nip and nap snack bar approach. In time, those round-the-clock feeds will become a thing of the sleep-deprived past, and feedings will start coming at more reasonable intervals, 2 to 3 hours and eventually 4 or so. Still on demand for her, but far less demanding for you.
Double the trouble, double the fun. Got your hands and both arms full with twins? While you probably had many months to prepare for your new life with a double blessing, the reality of life with 2 babies can hit like a ton of bricks and a ton of dirty diapers. That is, unless you know how to contain the chaos and how to handle and enjoy this doubly challenging time. Double up. Do as much as possible for your babies in tandem. That means waking them at the same time so they can be fed together, wearing them in a sling together, walking them in the stroller together, double burp them together across your lap, or with one on your lap and the other on your shoulder. When you can't double up, alternate. At an early age, daily baths aren't necessary, so bathe babies on alternate nights, or bathe them every 2nd or 3rd night and sponge in between. Putting them foot to foot or swaddled side by side in the same crib during the early weeks may help them sleep better. But check with a pediatrician, since some experts warn that prolonged tandem sleeping can increase the SIDS risk once the twins are able to roll over. Split up. The work, that is. When both parents are around, divide the household chores: cooking, cleaning, laundry, shopping, and the babies. You take over one baby, your spouse the other. Be sure that you alternate babies so that both get to bond with both parents. And of course, accept all the help you can get from any willing source. Try the double-breasted approach. Nursing twins can be physically challenging, but eliminates fussing with dozens of bottles and endless ounces of formula. Plus, it'll leave more room in your doubly stretched budget. Formula feeding 2 babies can cost a couple of small fortunes. Since trying to breastfeed only 1 baby at a time can turn into a 24/7 nursing marathon, try feeding them simultaneously. It's a good thing breasts come in pairs. You can prop your twosome on a twin feeding pillow in the football position with their feet behind you, or with their bodies crossed in front of you. Alternate the breast each baby gets at every feeding to avoid creating favorites and mismatched breasts should one baby turn out to be a greedier suckler than the other, or to avoid one baby getting less to eat if one breast turns out to be a less productive provider. If you find it too difficult to breastfeed your twins exclusively, you can nurse one while you bottle feed the other, again, alternating from feeding to feeding. Plan to have some extra hands on hand if you're bottle feeding. Bottle feeding twins requires either an extra set of hands or great ingenuity. If you find yourself with two babies and just two hands at feeding time, you can sit on a sofa between the babies, prop them up on pillows or a twin feeding pillow, with their feet toward the back and hold a bottle for each. Or hold them both in your arms with the bottles in bottle proppers raised to a comfortable height by pillows. You can also occasionally prop the bottle for one baby in a baby seat, but never lying down, while you feed the other the traditional way, or put both of them in their infant seats side by side and feed them at the same time. Feeding them one after the other is another possibility, but you'll be spending twice as much time feeding them and will have half as much time to get anything else done. Back-to-back feeds will also put the babies on somewhat different napping schedules if they sleep after eating, which can be good if you'd like some time alone with each, or bad if you depend on that tandem sleeping time to rest or get other chores done. Don't split Z's. Sleep will necessarily be scarce for the first few months, but it will be scarcer if your babies are always waking at different times during the night. Instead, when the first cries, wake the second, if he or she isn't already awake, and feed them both. Any time that both members of your darling duo are napping during the day, catch a few winks yourself, or at least try to put your feet up. Double up on equipment. When you don't have another pair of hands around to help, utilize such conveniences as baby carriers. You can use a large sling for two babies, use two slings, or tote one baby in a carrier and one in your arms. Baby swings and infant seats. A play yard is a safe playground for your twins as they get older. And because they'll have each other for company, they will be willing to be relegated to it more often and for longer periods than a singleton would. Select a twin stroller to meet your needs, and don't forget that you will need two car seats. Put both in the back seat of the car. Keep twice as many records. Who took what at which feeding? Who was bathed yesterday? Who's scheduled for today? Unless you keep a log or use an app, such as the What to Expect app, to keep track, you're sure to forget. Also make note in a permanent record book of immunizations, illnesses, and so on. Though most of the time the babies will both get everything that's going around, occasionally only one will, and you may not remember which one. Go one-on-one. Though it won't be easy, at least in the beginning, there are ways to find that special one-on-one time with each baby during the day. When you're better rested yourself, stagger nap time. Put one baby down 15 minutes before the other so you can devote some individualized attention to the one who's awake. Or take only one on an errand and leave the other one with a sitter. Even everyday baby care, diaper changes, or getting the babies dressed can be a chance to bond with each of your twins. Be doubly alert once your twins are mobile. You'll find, as your babies begin crawling and cruising, that what one of them doesn't think of in the way of exploits, the other will. So they will need to be watched twice as carefully. Double up on support. Other parents of twins will be your best source of insights and tips, so be sure to tap into them. Don't know anyone in the same double boat? Start hanging out on the twin message boards online. Check out whattoexpect.com. Expect things to get doubly better. The first 4 months with twins are the most challenging. Once you begin to work out the many logistics, you'll find yourself falling into an easier rhythm. Keep in mind, too, that twins are often each other's best company. Many have a way of keeping each other busy that parents of demanding singletons envy, and that will free you up more and more in the months and years to come.
Changing your mind about breastfeeding.
I've been breastfeeding my son for 3 weeks, and I'm just not enjoying it. I'd like to switch to a bottle, but I feel so guilty.
Not having fun breastfeeding yet? That's pretty common. given the bumpy start that so many brand new breastfeeding teams get off to. Sore nipples, latching on problems, both of those and more. Usually, even the rockiest road leads to a smooth ride by the middle of the second month, at which point breastfeeding becomes a walk in the park, and typically an enjoyable one at that. So it might make sense to hold off on your decision until your baby is 6 weeks old, or even 2 months. If by then you're still finding breastfeeding a drag, you can quit or consider doing the combo, supplementing with formula instead of breastfeeding exclusively. Your baby will have received many of the benefits of breastfeeding, and you'll have given breastfeeding your best shot, which means you can win-win when you ultimately wean-wean. Another option that some moms prefer, pumping their baby's meals and feeding from a bottle, aka excessive pumping. Decided that you don't have it in you to wait on quitting? Grab a bottle of formula and get busy. Too much formula.
My baby loves his bottle. If it were up to him, he'd feed all day. How do I know when to give him more formula or when to stop?
Because their intake is regulated both by their appetite and by an ingenious supply and demand system, breastfed babies rarely get too much or too little of a good thing. Bottle-fed babies whose intake is regulated instead by their parents sometimes do, if they drink too much formula, that is. As long as your baby is healthy, happy, wetting his diapers regularly, and gaining adequate weight, you know he's getting enough formula. In other words, if your little one is eating to his appetite, even if that appetite is huge, there's nothing to be concerned about. But if his bottle becomes the liquid equivalent of an all-you-can-eat buffet, refilled even when he's full, he can easily get too much. Too much formula can lead to a too chubby baby, which research shows can lead to a too chubby child and a too chubby adult. But it can also lead to other problems. If your baby seems to be gaining weight too quickly, or if he seems to be spitting up a lot, he might be taking more ounces than his tiny tummy can handle at this point. Your baby's pediatrician will be able to tell you what his rate of gain should be and how much formula, approximately, he should be getting at each feeding. If he does seem to be taking too much, try offering smaller volume feedings and stop when baby seems full instead of pushing him to finish. If he's fussy after a feed, consider that he may just need a burp, not a second serving. Or serve up some comfort or entertainment instead. Babies cry for reasons other than hunger. Keep in mind, too, that it may just be the sucking, not the formula that comes with it, that he's craving. If your baby's a natural-born sucker, or if he's sucking and drinking because it helps soothe his acid reflux, consider offering a pacifier or his fingers after he's had his fill of formula. Supplementary water.
I'm wondering if I should be giving my son a bottle of water.
When it comes to feeding, newborn babies have just two options, and so do the parents who feed them, breast milk or formula. For the first 6 months or so, one or the other, or a combo of the two, will provide your baby with all the food and fluids he needs. No water necessary. In fact, adding supplementary water to a baby's already all-liquid diet isn't only unnecessary. In excess, it can be dangerous, possibly diluting his blood and causing serious chemical imbalances, just as adding too much water when preparing formula can. If your baby's breastfeeding, water can also satisfy his appetite and his need to suck, possibly sabotaging breastfeeding and weight gain. Once your sweetie has started solids, offering sips of water from a cup, babies can't get too much water from a cup, only from a bottle, will be fine. And good practice for the days when all drinks will come from a cup instead of your breasts or a bottle. If the weather's really hot, some pediatricians will okay sips of water for a formula-fed baby before solids are started, but do check first. Vitamin supplements.
We've heard a lot of different opinions about vitamin supplements. Should we give our baby one, and what kind should we give him?
When it comes to deciding whether or not to give your baby a vitamin supplement and which kind to give, it's the pediatrician's opinion that matters most. That's because your baby's doctor will take into account not only the ever-evolving research and recommendations on vitamin supplements, but your little one's unique needs. If your little one is exclusively or partially breastfed, he'll be getting most of the vitamins and minerals he needs from breast milk, assuming you're eating a good diet and taking a daily prenatal vitamin or one that's designed for breastfeeding moms. But he'll definitely fall short on vitamin D, which is why pediatricians recommend that breastfed babies get 400 IU a day of vitamin D in the form of a supplement, probably ACD, which combines vitamins A, C, and D, starting in the first few days of life. And while he'll score enough iron from your breast milk in the first 4 months, levels can diminish after that point, which is why the pediatrician is likely to add an iron supplement to the mix. 1 milligram per kilogram of baby's weight per day, probably in an ACD supplement with iron added, at least until iron-rich solids like fortified cereals, meat, and green vegetables are introduced. As an added precaution, the pediatrician may suggest that your little one stay on an iron supplement throughout the first year. The added benefit of combining iron with vitamin C, either in a supplement or with food, the vitamin C helps with iron absorption. If your little one is exclusively bottle-fed, chances are he's getting most of the nutrients he needs through formula, though he may fall short on vitamin D until he's consistently drinking enough to meet his daily quota. He'd have to down a minimum of 32 ounces, something he's not likely managing yet. To fill the gap, the pediatrician may recommend giving your baby a vitamin D supplement, probably in the form of ACD drops, at least in the short term. Later, once your baby gets serious about solids and starts drinking less formula, the doctor may suggest adding iron as well, again, probably in an ACD with iron formula. Ask the pediatrician for recommendations on what supplements your baby needs, if any, and when. Happily, most infant vitamin drops are tasty, and many, though far from all babies, have no problem taking them. It might be easier to give the drops right before a feed, when your baby's apt to lap them up from hunger, or you may find him more receptive after a feed. A tasteless powdered supplement can be substituted for the drops if your baby takes a bottle. You mix them right into formula or breast milk. Just make sure your baby drinks the whole bottle to get the full dose. The powder can also be mixed with solids once they're started, but again, only if you can count on your baby finishing that bowl full. If your baby has health problems, was premature, or if you're breastfeeding and think your diet might be lacking some important vitamins and minerals, say if you're a vegan and you're not getting enough B12, zinc, or calcium, the doctor might recommend additional supplements for your baby. Preterm infants who are breastfed will likely be prescribed an iron supplement of 2 milligrams per kilogram daily, starting at 1 month of age and continuing until their intake of iron-rich foods fills the requirement for this essential mineral. What about fluoride? Babies under 6 months don't need fluoride supplementation, and older babies need it only if there isn't adequate fluoride in the water supply, or if they don't drink tap water. Bottled water doesn't contain it. Ask your baby's doctor for specific recommendations. Keep in mind that with fluoride, as with most good things, too much can be bad. Excessive intake while the teeth are developing in the gums, such as might occur when a baby drinks fluoridated water, either plain or mixed with formula, and takes a supplement, can cause fluorosis or mottling, chalk marks appearing on the teeth. Excessive intake can also occur if excessive amounts of fluoridated toothpaste are used.
For parents, getting everything done. Take the responsibility of caring for a newborn baby for the first time. Add in the days and nights that seem to blur together as one endless feeding, plus a few too many visitors, a generous helping of postpartum hormonal upheaval for mom, and for some dads too, and possibly a fair amount of home clutter accumulating during your stay in the hospital, or at least in the last days of pregnancy, when you could barely move, never mind clean. Throw in the inevitable mountain of gifts, boxes, wrapping paper, and cards to keep track of. It's only natural to feel that as your new life with baby begins, your old life, with its order and cleanliness, is crumbling around you. As hard as it may be to believe now, your inability to keep up with both new baby and house during the first weeks or months in no way predicts your future success at the juggling act called parenthood. Things are bound to get better as you get more sleep, become more adept at all those baby care tasks, and learn to be a little more flexible. It will also help to get help. If you haven't already arranged for household help, paid or unpaid, and taken steps to streamline housekeeping and cooking chores, now's the time to do so. Also, be sure that there's a fair division of labor, both baby care and household care, between parents, if there are two. Get your priorities straight before you straighten up. Is it more important to get the vacuuming done while baby's napping, or to put your feet up and relax? Is it really essential to clean out the fridge, or would going for a stroll with the baby be a better use of your time? Keep in mind that doing too much too soon can rob you of the energy to accomplish anything well, and that while your house will someday be clean again, your baby will never be 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 months old again. In other words, stop cleaning and smell the babies. Get organized. Have a million to-dos floating through your sleep-deprived head. Write them down. First thing every morning, or before you crash every night, make a list of what needs to be done. Divide your priorities into three categories: chores that must be taken care of as soon as possible, those that can wait until later in the day, and those that can be put off until tomorrow or next week or indefinitely. Assign approximate times to each activity, taking into account your personal biological clock. Are you useless first thing in the morning, or do you do your best work at the crack of dawn? As well as your babies, as best you can determine it at this point. Though organizing your day with lists doesn't always mean that everything will get done on schedule. In fact, for new parents, it rarely does. It will give you a sense of control over what may now seem like a completely uncontrollable situation. You may even find, once you've made your list, that you actually have less to do than you thought. Don't forget to cross off or delete completed tasks for a satisfying feeling of accomplishment. And don't worry about what's not crossed off. Just move those items to the next day's list. Another good organizational trick of the new parent trade: keep a running list of baby gifts and their givers as they're received. You think you'll remember that your cousin Jessica sent that darling blue and yellow onesie set, but after the 17th onesie set has arrived, that memory may be dim. And check off each gift on the list as the thank you note is sent, so you don't end up sending two notes to Aunt Karen and Uncle Marvin and none to your boss. Get simplified. Take every shortcut you can find. Make friends with frozen vegetables and healthy frozen entrees, your local salad bar, the pizza delivery guy, online grocery, and diaper shopping. Get a jump on tomorrow night. Once you've bedded baby down each night and before you collapse, summon up the strength to take care of a few chores so that you'll have a head start on the next morning. Restock the diaper bag. Measure out the coffee for the coffee pot. Sort the laundry. Lay out clothes for yourself and the baby. In 10 minutes or so, you'll accomplish what would take you at least 3 times as long with the baby awake, and you'll be able to sleep better when your little one lets you, knowing that you'll have less to do in the morning. Get out. Plan an outing every day with your little one, even if it's just a walk around the mall. The change of pace and space will allow you to return to casa chaos somewhat refreshed. Get to expect the unexpected. The best-laid plans of parents often, actually very often, go awry. baby's all bundled up for an outing, the diaper bag is ready, your coat is on, and suddenly the distinct gurglings of an explosive poop can be heard from under all baby's gear. Off comes the coat, bunting, diaper, 10 minutes lost from an already tight schedule. To allow for the unexpected, try to build extra time into everything you do. Get the joke. If you can laugh, you're less likely to cry, so keep your sense of humor, even in the face of total disorder and utter clutter. It'll help you keep your sanity, too. Get used to it. Living with a baby means living with a certain amount of mayhem most of the time. And as baby grows, so will the challenge of keeping the mayhem in check. No sooner will you scoop the blocks back into their canister than he or she will dump them back out again. As fast as you can wipe mashed peas off the wall behind the high chair, your baby can redecorate with strained peaches. You'll put safety latches on the kitchen cabinets, and your one baby demolition derby will figure out how to open them, covering the floor with your pots and pans. And remember, when you finally pack your last child off to college, your house will be orderly once again, and so empty and quiet that you'll be ready to welcome the pandemonium and even the dirty laundry they bring home on school vacations. Whites, colors, and babies? Tired of separating your baby's laundry, especially because the loads, like the clothes, are so tiny? Here's a happy laundry alert. Most babies probably don't need their clothes washed separately from the rest of the families with special baby laundry soaps. Even the high-potency detergents that really get clothes clean, eliminating most stains and odors, the kind babies are very good at generating, aren't irritating to most infants when well rinsed. Rinsing is most thorough, and stain-fighting powers are most effective with liquid detergents. To test your baby's sensitivity to your favorite laundry detergent, add one item that will be worn close to baby's skin, such as a t-shirt, to your next family load, being careful not to overdo the detergent or underdo the rinse. If that tender skin shows no rash or irritation, go ahead and wash baby's clothes with yours. If a rash does appear, try another detergent, preferably one without colors and fragrances, before deciding you have to stick with a baby laundry formula. Love the smell of baby laundry detergent? Go ahead, make your day. And your whole family's laundry smell baby fresh.
Spitting up. My baby spits up so much that I'm worried she's not getting enough to eat. Although it seems as if your little one is literally losing her lunch and her breakfast and dinner and snacks, she's almost certainly not. What looks like a lot of spit up probably amounts to no more than a tablespoon or two of milk, mixed with saliva and mucus. Certainly not enough to interfere with your baby's nourishment. If your baby's growing well, peeing and pooping plenty, and thriving, there's no need to cry over spit up milk or to worry about it. Doctors are fond of saying that spit up is a laundry problem, not a health problem. It's smelly and messy, but it's normal and so common. Most babies spit up at least occasionally, and many spit up with every feeding. The reason for this malodorous mayhem? Newborns have an immature sphincter between the esophagus and stomach, which allows food to back up even more easily since they spend so much of their time lying flat on their backs or semi-reclining. They also have excess mucus and saliva that needs to be cleared, and up and out is the most effective way for an infant to ship that goop out. Often they spit up because they eat too much, especially if they're bottle-fed and mommy or daddy is pushing more ounces than a tiny tummy can handle, or because they're getting too many air bubbles with their milk, particularly if they were crying before the feed, and occasionally because they are burped too often. Later, teething babies often gag and spit up thanks to all the drool they're producing. Most babies stop spitting when they start sitting, usually at about 6 months. The introduction of solids, also at about 6 months, can help limit spit up too. After all, it's easier to spit up an entirely liquid diet. Until then, there's no sure way to stop the spitting up, though a bib for your baby and a burp cloth for you should prevent some of the mess. But you can also cut down on the frequency if you keep bubbles at bay by minimizing air gulping during mealtimes. Don't feed her when she's crying and try to calm her down between feeds. Put gravity in your corner by feeding her with her upper body elevated and upright, or nursing in the laid-back position. Tilt bottles so that the liquid, not air, fills the nipple, or use bottles that don't allow air to enter the nipple. Avoid bouncing her around while she's eating or just afterward. You'll be less likely to bring up the works if you keep her relatively still. Break for burps often enough, at least once halfway through her feedings, and more often if she's a slow eater or seems extra fussy. Just keep in mind that some babies spit up more when they're burped more often, and that less burping or letting baby self-burp might lead to less spitting. Keep her upright as much as possible after meals, but don't elevate the crib mattress. It's not safe and doesn't decrease spitting up. Most babies are happy spitters. In other words, the spitting doesn't bother them in the slightest, though the same probably can't be said for their parents, and it doesn't affect weight gain or growth. Some babies have discomfort with spitting, i.e., gassy or fussy, or may have silent reflux, pain and fussiness without spitting up, and the doctor might diagnose it as gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD. If your baby's spitting is accompanied by prolonged gagging and coughing, or associated with poor weight gain, or if it seems severe, or if the vomit is brown or green in color, or shoots out 2 or 3 feet, aka projectile vomiting, call the doctor. These could indicate a medical problem, such as an intestinal obstruction or pyloric stenosis.
Quick tip. Keep a small plastic bottle of water mixed with a little baking soda handy for spit-up spot cleaning. Rubbing a cloth moistened with the mixture on spots will keep them from setting and will eliminate most of the odor. Or carry a go-to spot remover. Or use a diaper wipe. And definitely get in the habit of pre-treating spots when it's time for laundry.
Blood and spit up.
When my 2-week-old spit up today after I breastfed her, there was some reddish streaks that looked like blood in with the curdled milk. Now I'm really worried.
Any blood that seems to be coming from your newborn, particularly when you found it in her spit up, is bound to worry you. But before you panic, try to determine whose blood it actually is. If your nipples are cracked, even very slightly, it's probably your blood, which baby could be sucking in and then spitting up, along with the milk each time she nurses. If your nipples aren't obviously the cause, they may be, even if you can't see the tiny cracks. Or if you're not breastfeeding, call your pediatrician to help you figure out the source of the blood in your baby's spit up. Milk allergy.
My baby is crying a lot, and I'm wondering if he might be allergic to the milk in his formula. How can I tell?
As eager as you might be to uncover a cause and an easy cure for your baby's crying, it's not likely the milk that's to blame. Milk allergy may be the most common food allergy in infants, but it's a lot less common than most people believe. Only about 2 to 3 in 100 babies will develop a true allergy to milk. And milk-allergic babies will have other symptoms accompanying the crying. A baby who's having a severe allergic response to milk will usually vomit frequently and have loose, watery stools, possibly tinged with blood. Less severe reactions may include occasional vomiting and loose, mucousy stools. Some babies who are allergic to milk may also have eczema, hives, wheezing, and/or a nasal discharge or stuffiness when exposed to milk protein. Unfortunately, there's no way to test for milk allergy, except through trial and error. But don't try anything, including a change of formula, without the doctor's advice. If there's no history of allergy in your family, and if your baby doesn't have any symptoms other than crying, the doctor will probably suggest that you treat the crying spells as ordinary colic. If there's a family history of allergies or your baby has symptoms of milk allergy other than crying, the doctor may recommend a trial change of formula from regular cow's milk formula to hydrolysate, in which the protein is partly broken down or predigested, or elemental formula. If the symptoms disappear, it's likely your baby is allergic to milk, though sometimes it can just be a coincidence, and you'll probably be told to keep him on the hydrolysate formula for now. Happily, milk allergies are eventually outgrown, so at some point the pediatrician may recommend a reintroduction of cow's milk formula, or after a year, whole milk. If symptoms don't return when you switch back, your baby either wasn't really allergic in the first place or has outgrown the allergy, at which point you can bring on the dairy products without worry. A switch to soy formula usually isn't recommended when a true milk allergy is suspected, since a baby who's allergic to milk is often allergic to soy as well. Very rarely, the problem is an enzyme deficiency. An infant is born unable to produce lactase, the enzyme needed to digest the milk sugar lactose. Symptoms of congenital lactose intolerance include gas, diarrhea, bloated stomach, and failure to gain weight. A formula containing little or no lactose will usually resolve the problem. If the problem is not traced to milk allergy or intolerance, it's probably best to stay with or switch back to a cow's milk formula, since it is a better breast milk substitute, though the doctor may suggest one for sensitive stomachs. Sensitivities in breastfed babies.
I'm breastfeeding exclusively, and when I changed my baby's diaper today, I noticed some streaks of blood in his bowel movement. Does that mean he's allergic to my breast milk?
Babies are virtually never allergic to their mother's milk, but in rare cases, a baby can be allergic to something in his mom's diet that ends up in her milk, often cow's milk proteins. And it sounds as if this might be the case with your very sensitive infant. Symptoms of such an allergy, known as allergic colitis, may include blood in baby's stool, extreme fussiness, lack of or minimal weight gain, and vomiting and/or diarrhea. Your baby could have one or all of those symptoms. Researchers suspect that some babies may become sensitized to certain foods mother eats while baby is still in utero, causing allergies after birth. Although cow's milk and other dairy products are common culprits in these reactions, they're not the only ones. Others include soy, nuts, wheat, and peanuts. A quick check with your baby's doctor will probably lead you to this course of action. To determine what in your diet is causing your baby's allergy, try eliminating a potential problem food for 2 to 3 weeks. Baby's symptoms may ease during the first week after you've eliminated a food from your diet. But for a sure call, wait the full 2 to 3 weeks to confirm that you've found the culprit. Occasionally, no correlation between foods and allergic symptoms is found. In that case, your baby might just have had a gastrointestinal virus that caused the streaks of blood in his stool. Or there might be small cracks or fissures in his anus that caused the bleeding. Another possibility, baby may have swallowed your blood if your nipples are cracked, and that blood can exit in spit up or poop. Sometimes the blood can give poop a black tinge instead. Monitoring by your baby's doctor should solve the mystery. Bowel movements.
I expected one, maybe two bowel movements a day from my breastfed baby, but she seems to have one in every diaper, sometimes as many as 10 a day. And they're very loose. Could she have diarrhea?
Most breastfed infants seem bent on beating the world record for dirtying diapers. But not only is a prolific poop pattern not a bad sign in a breastfed newborn, it's a very good sign. Since the amount that's coming out is related to the amount that's going in, Lots of movements a day in the first 6 weeks means your baby's getting plenty of nutrition from your breast milk. In the early days, breastfed babies usually have, on average, and average being the operative word here, one poopy diaper per day of life. In other words, on day one of her life, she'll poop once. On day two, she'll poop twice. Fortunately, this pattern doesn't usually continue past the fifth or so day of life. After day five, the average breastfed newborn will poop about 5 times per day. What counts as a BM worth counting? Any poop bigger than the size of a quarter can be added to your tally, if you're keeping track, that is. Some babies like yours will poop more often, sometimes even once per feeding. Some less, though consistently infrequent poops in the first few weeks can mean a baby's not getting enough to eat. By 6 weeks, the poop pattern of breastfed babies may start to change, and you may notice your baby skipping a day or two or even three between BMs. Or not, some babies will continue to poop more often, filling their diapers at least several times a day throughout the first year. It's not necessary to continue keeping count after 6 weeks as long as baby is happy and gaining weight. The number may vary from day to day, and that's perfectly normal too. Normal also for breastfed infants is a very soft, sometimes even watery stool. But diarrhea, frequent stools that are liquidy, smelly, and may contain mucus, often accompanied by fever and or weight loss, is less common among exclusively breastfed babies. If they do get it, they have fewer, smaller movements than bottle-fed babies with diarrhea and recover more quickly, probably because of the infection-fighting properties of breast milk. Explosive bowel movements.
My son's poops come with such force and such explosive sound, I'm beginning to think there's something wrong with my breast milk.
A breastfed newborn is rarely discreet when it comes to pooping. But the noisy barrage that fills the room as your little one fills his diaper is completely normal. While giggle-inducing for parents and sometimes a bit embarrassing in public, these explosive movements and the surprising variety of sounds that punctuates their passing are just a result of gas being forcefully expelled from an immature digestive system. Things should quiet down in a month or two.
Flat out, the best way to sleep. With all the significant health and safety benefits of Safe to Sleep, formerly known as Back to Sleep, come a few minor drawbacks. One, that newborns sleep less cozily on their backs, can be minimized by swaddling, which will keep your baby bugs snug and secure in a back sleeping position. Another, that babies who sleep on their backs are more likely to develop flat or bald spots from always facing the same direction, can be prevented with a flip. Alternate your infant's position for sleep, head at one end of the crib one night, the other the next. Because babies tend to focus on the same spot in a room, say a window, when they're on their backs, flipping their position will ensure that one side of the head won't get all the pressure, and that will make flattening or balding on that side less likely. If, in spite of your efforts, your baby's head flattens, plagiocephaly, or a bald spot develops, don't worry. Chances are these problems will go away on their own. Rarely a special headband or helmet will be prescribed to correct a case. Putting baby on her tummy to play when she's awake and watched will minimize flattening while allowing her to develop muscles and practice gross motor skills.
Passing gas.
My baby passes gas all day long, loudly. Could she be having tummy troubles?
The digestive exclamations that frequently explode from a newborn's tiny bottom, otherwise known as farts, are, like those explosive poops, perfectly normal. Think of it like new plumbing, which it is essentially. Once your newborn's digestive system works out the kinks, the gas will pass more quietly and less frequently, if not less pungently. Constipation.
I'm wondering if my formula-fed baby is constipated. He's been averaging only one BM every 2 or 3 days.
When it comes to constipation, frequency isn't what counts. Consistency is. Formula-fed babies aren't considered constipated unless their poops are firmly formed or come out in hard pellets, or if they cause pain or bleeding from a fissure or crack in the anus as a result of pushing a hard poop. If your baby's movements are soft and pass without a struggle, even if they arrive only once every 3 to 4 days, he's not constipated. No need to jump to constipation conclusions either if he grunts, groans, and strains when he poops. That's standard pooping practice for babies, even when they're passing soft poop, probably because their anuses aren't strong or coordinated enough for easy elimination. Plus, young babies who usually poop lying down get no help from gravity. If your baby really does seem to be constipated, check with the doctor for confirmation and a treatment plan if necessary. Don't use any at-home remedies without medical advice. For breastfed babies, constipation is rare, but infrequent poops in the early weeks can be a sign that an infant isn't getting enough to eat. Sleeping position.
I know my baby's supposed to sleep on her back, but she seems so uncomfortable that way. Wouldn't she sleep better on her tummy, or at least on her side?
There are no two ways about it. Back sleeping is a must for your baby's safety. Research has shown that compared with tummy sleepers, back sleepers have fewer fevers, fewer problems with nasal congestion, and fewer ear infections, and are no more likely than tummy sleepers to spit up during the night or choke on their spit up. But by far the most important reason why back sleeping is crucial: placing babies to sleep on their backs sharply reduces the risk of crib death, sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS. Start your baby, even your preemie, sleeping on her back without any sleep positioners or wedges, both of which are considered unsafe, right away so that she'll get used to and feel comfortable in that position from the beginning. Some babies fuss more on their backs at first. That may be because they feel less cozy and secure since they can't cuddle up against the mattress. They may startle during sleep more on their backs too, and that can lead to more frequent wake-ups. Swaddling your little one for sleep or using a sleep sack will help ease startling and help make her more comfy and content on her back. The incidence of SIDS is highest in the first 6 months, although the recommendation of back to sleep applies for the whole first year and applies no matter who's putting baby to sleep. So make sure anyone who cares for your baby follows this recommendation. Once baby starts rolling over, however, she may decide that she prefers a tummy position for sleep. Still, continue to put your baby down on her back and let her decide about flipping. And don't forget the flip side of back to sleep: tummy to play.
Safe sleeping. No ifs, ands, or buts. The safest way for baby to sleep is on his or her back. Babies placed on their tummies or sides to sleep are at greater risk for SIDS. But safe sleep isn't just about position. It's about conditions. Always put your baby to sleep on a firm mattress without pillows, comforters, blankets, bumpers, or stuffed animals. Location matters too. The safest place for your infant to sleep is in a bassinet or crib next to your bed. Don't let baby sleep in a rock and play, bouncer, or swing. Not only don't they meet safe sleep guidelines, but sleeping in a semi-reclining position can obstruct a baby's airway, causing stiffening of the neck muscles, torticollis, and increase the risk of head flattening. Also extremely unsafe for sleep are beanbag chairs, waterbeds, gliders, recliners, sofas, and armchairs. Is silence golden when baby is sleeping? Should silence rule when baby is sleeping? Should you tiptoe around the house when he's snoozing? Put your phone to vibrate when she's napping? Ask visitors to knock on the door instead of use the doorbell? Go full-on librarian, shushing the dog and anyone who tries to speak above a whisper? Maybe not. These typical techniques for keeping a sleeping baby sleeping might work in the short term, but may backfire in the long term when you discover that your little one can't sleep in the real world, a world where phones and doorbells ring and dogs bark. Plus, it may not be necessary or even productive. Just how much noise and what kinds of noise a newborn can sleep through depends partly on the sounds he or she became accustomed to before birth, say that barking dog, and partly on individual temperament. Some babies are much more sensitive to stimulus than others, but others can't sleep without some background noise. After all, the uterus your little one is used to was a pretty noisy place. So take cues from your baby in figuring out how far you must go to protect him or her from noise during naps and at night. If a baby turns out to be especially sound sensitive during sleep, it's probably wise to silence the phone, to change the doorbell to a less shrill ring, and to turn down the volume around the house. Avoid these tactics, however, if baby sleeps through everything.
No sleeping pattern. My baby wakes up several times a night to feed, and I'm exhausted. Shouldn't she be getting into a regular sleep pattern by now? As much as you and your aching body and dark circled under eyes would love a full night's sleep, you'll have to wait a little longer before you can clock one in. Babies aren't expected to sleep through the night in the first month, and for a couple of reasons. One, with so much growing to do and such a small tank to fuel up with, most still need at least one and usually more feeds to get them through the night. This holds especially true for breastfed newborns who need frequent feeds even at night, making sleeping through the night an impossible dream for the first 3 months or so. Weight plays a role too. A small baby will need to feed more often than a large one and will continue to need during the night feeds until she catches up in the pounds department. Trying to start a sleep schedule too soon could not only interfere with the establishment of a mom's milk supply, but can also affect baby's growth. Another reason for answering your baby's midnight and 3 a.m. calls, whether she's breastfed or bottle-fed, small or large. She is just beginning to learn about the world, which is still a new and somewhat scary place. The most important lesson she needs to learn now isn't how to sleep on a schedule, but that when she cries, you'll be there to comfort her, even in the middle of the night, when you're understandably beyond beat, and even when she's up for the fourth time in 6 hours. Though you may find it hard to believe right now, your little one will one day sleep through the night, and so will you.
Better sleep for baby. Any sleep sound good to you right now, preferably at night? You can optimize your baby's sleep potential, and thus yours, with these soothing sleep strategies, many of which recreate some of the comforts of home in the womb. Keep it cozy. The wide open spaces of a crib can be an unsettling setting, making your tiny newborn feel isolated, vulnerable, and far removed from the cozy confines of mommy's womb. So consider putting your baby to sleep in a snugger space that better approximates the uterine home just left behind, a cradle, a bassinet, or a play yard that has a bassinet top. For added coziness, swaddle your infant or use a sleep sack. Control for temperature. After 9 months of perfect climate control, being too warm or too cold can disturb a baby's sleep, and overheating can be a risk factor for SIDS. So keep baby and the room temperature just right. Touch the nape of baby's neck to check on comfort. Rockabye baby. In the uterus, your baby was most active when you were resting. When you were up and on the go, your baby slowed down, lulled by the motion. Out of the womb, movement still has a soothing effect. Rocking, swaying, and patting will help get your baby to sleep. A vibrating pad that can be slipped under the crib mattress can continue the rocking motion once you've put your baby down. Sound it out. The uterus is a noisier place than you'd think. For months, your baby has slept to the sound of your heartbeat, the gurgling of your tummy, and the ambient sound of your voice, which can make sleeping without some background noise tricky now. So try the hum of a fan or a white noise machine, the soft strains of baby-friendly tunes from a musical mobile or app, or one of those baby soothers that imitate uterine or heartbeat sounds. Wait out those whimpers. Research suggests that a parent's proximity during baby's sleep may reduce the risk of SIDS, which is why experts recommend room sharing for the first 6 to 12 months. The only downside with this arrangement, you'll be more likely to pick up your baby at the slightest stirring. For better sleep all around, wait out those whimpers and pick your little one up only once it's clear he or she is awake and ready for a feed or attention. Make bedtime routine. Since your newborn will fall asleep most of the time while nursing or bottle feeding, a bedtime routine might seem unnecessary, but it's never too early to get in the bedtime routine habit. And while you're at it, a naptime routine too. Later, it can become more involved and include a nightly bath, which isn't necessary yet. But for now, it can simply come as a series of predictable steps designed to unwind your little one. Dim the lights. Speak in hushed tones. Add a little soft music. Cuddle quietly. Give a gentle massage. Maybe even read a story. The breast or bottle can be last on the agenda for babies who still fall asleep that way, but can come earlier for those that have already learned to doze off on their own. Don't nix naps. Some parents try to solve nighttime sleeping problems by keeping their babies awake during the day, even if the baby wants to sleep. The problem with this strategy? Overtired babies sleep more fitfully than well-rested ones. It's fine to limit the length of daytime naps if your little one is still mixing up days and nights, but don't nix those much-needed naps altogether. See the light of day. Infants exposed to afternoon sunlight tend to have a better night's sleep, so try an after-lunch stroll. Know when to quit the crutches. For now, as your newborn adjusts to sleep on the outside instead of snuggled in your cozy womb, a little extra comfort in the form of soothing motion, white noise, or music can go a long way in encouraging better sleep. Just be ready to wean baby off these comforting sleep crutches later in the first year, usually by about 6 months or so.
Restless sleep.
Our baby seems so restless and noisy when he sleeps. Is there a way to get him to sleep more soundly?
Sleeping like a baby sounds pretty peaceful, but the truth is, baby sleep rarely is. While newborns do sleep a lot, 16 hours a day on average, they also wake up a lot in the process. That's because much of their sleep is REM, rapid eye movement, a light active sleep phase with dreaming, a lot of restless movement, and sometimes startling. And for babies, a lot of noise. When you hear your baby fuss or whimper at night, it's probably because he's finishing a REM period. As he gets older, your baby's sleeping patterns will mature. He will have less REM sleep and longer periods of the much sounder, deeper, quiet sleep, from which it's harder to wake him. He will continue to stir and whimper periodically, but less frequently. In the meantime, if you're sharing a room with your noisy little sleeper, as recommended by the AAP for SIDS prevention, keep in mind that picking him up at every midnight murmuring will disrupt his sleep and yours. Instead, wait until you're sure he's awake and ready for a feeder comfort. A steady cry will clue you in. Mixing up of day and night.
My 3-week-old sleeps most of the day and wants to stay up all night. How can I get her to reverse her schedule so we all can get some sleep?
Got a little baby vampire on your hands? Partying all night, sleeping all day. That's not surprising, given that just 3 weeks ago, your baby lived in the dark around the clock. It was also in your womb that she became accustomed to snoozing the day away, since that's when you were most active, knocking her out with rocking and kicking her heels up at night when you were lying down trying to rest. Happily, her nocturnal ways are only temporary, and as she adjusts to life on the outside, she'll stop mixing up her days and nights, likely on her own, probably within the next few weeks, if not sooner. If you'd like to help speed her realization that nighttime is the preferred sleep time, not the preferred party time,
A little gentle persuasion may do the trick. Start by limiting her daytime naps to no more than 3 or 4 hours each. Although waking a sleeping baby can be tricky, it's usually possible. Try changing her diaper, holding her upright, burping her, rubbing under her chin, or massaging her feet. Once she's somewhat alert, try a little interaction to stimulate her. Talk to her, sing lively songs, or dangle a toy within her range of vision, which is about 8 to 12 inches. Don't, however, try to keep her from napping at all during the day, with the hope that she'll sleep at night. An overtired and perhaps overstimulated baby is not likely to sleep well at night. Making a clear distinction between day and night may help too. Wherever she naps, avoid darkening the room or trying to keep the noise level down. When she wakens, ply her with stimulating activities. At night, do the opposite. When you put baby to bed, strive for darkness. Use room darkening shades, relative quiet, and inactivity. No matter how tempting it may be, don't play with her or do a lot of socializing when she wakes up during the night. Don't turn on the lights or the TV while you're feeding her. Avoid unnecessary diaper changes and